Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, fourth and final hour of the morning show presented by St. Mary's Medical Group. David Johnston, Logan Booker along with you. On a rainy morning here in Athens, but they're telling us this stuff is moving out.
It's also kind of cold outside.
55 right now.
It's chilly for
a high today of 66.
May 20th.
Yeah.
Temperatures in the 50s.
A little bit different than it was this day 10 years ago.
Ooh, boy.
With a high of 85.
All the reminiscing we did on Brooks Conrad's walk-off Grand Slam makes me even more upset that I left that game.
Raw dog.
But it was hot, man. We were down 9-3. 8-0.
And they closed the beer stands.
I had free beer back at home. Well, not free. I had pre-purchased
it.
But you know
what
I'm saying.
I know what you're saying.
No lines at the bathroom. I should have stayed. My fault.
We are, do we have David?
Yeah, we're good.
Oh, okay, yeah. We are excited to have. I had to ask because we're not in the same studio, so I got to make sure we're all on the same page here. Our a good buddy, friend of the show, David Paschal, joins us from the Chattanooga Times Free Press. Easy for me to say. Also, the co-host of Press Row on, hey, you guys are an ESPN affiliate also, 105.1 The Zone. What times are you on, David, on the radio airwaves in Chattabooga?
Hey, David, I'm on from 3-6.
Excellent, excellent. And good to talk to you. How you been?
Been okay. I mean, three kids at three different schools with three different virtual learning programs.
But oh, my gosh.
Starting to wind down. And but other than that, my wife and I are keeping the sanity, and so yeah, it's been nuts everywhere, obviously.
Well, do you live in Georgia or do you live in Tennessee?
I used to, this time last year I would have lived in Georgia, but you know, Lookout Mountain's really bizarre. It's like 83 miles long. You've got the tip in Tennessee that's 3 miles long, and then like 50 miles are in Georgia and 30 miles are in Alabama. But We moved from the Georgia side to the Tennessee side last spring.
Oh wow, okay, interesting. So did the shelter in place and all the quarantining and all the schooling and everything, how much different was Tennessee from Georgia? I know Georgia was just a little bit quicker than some of the other states, but was there any other differences between the two states?
Tennessee's got a weird dynamic in that you've got the four major cities of Nashville, Memphis, Knoxville, and Chattanooga, and they've all got Democratic mayor.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got a Republican governor, and so you had kind of the, you know, the mayor's wanting to do one thing, the governor wanting to do another, and the governor you know, eventually overrode a lot of the things that some of the mayors were doing. So long story short, we kind of wound up opening in Tennessee right after you know, Kemp and Georgia did. I
gotcha.
Mean, so they were pretty close.
Gotcha.
It's just Georgia being the first one kind of got the national headlines, but Tennessee was just kind of right behind on that.
Right. Well, whoever's doing a lot of the homeschooling for the three kids that are three different schools, you or your wife or whatever, God bless you, as they say. I know that's been fun.
It's bizarre. The kids kind of realize, especially the youngest one who's in fourth grade, that if you really kind of focus and just get after it, you can kind of be done in like an hour and a half or two.
Yeah.
And then you're just kind of like, where's the rest of the day? but he was bummed because, you know, he's 10. And so I was coaching his little 9 and 10 year old baseball team. So he was at the top of the age group. And I think we had two practices. One of them was freezing. One of them was wet. And then they canceled the season. So I know a lot of kids are having to deal with that and have been bummed about that, not having baseball this spring.
Well, Logan and I are in two different studios. How's your radio setup been?
We actually are in the same studio, and I think that has helped as far as just, like, from not going nuts and all this. I mean, the fact that I do make the trip, because, you know, with the paper, I just write articles from home, which wasn't much different from what I was doing before. But, you know, just going down to the station at 2:30 and then, you know, just coming back at 6, there's been a little routine to that that's been good. So me and my co-host and our producer, you know, it's actually a pretty nice studio as far as that goes from a spacing standpoint. So, you know, we do the distancing thing in the same studio, which makes it nice. I mean, and I don't know, you said y'all are in different studios, but can y'all see one another?
Nope. Hey, David.
Okay, so that makes it challenging.
David, between me and you, don't tell him, but I don't mind not having to look at Dave every morning. It's okay.
Yeah.
I get that. It's just you run the risk of the, you know, talking over each other where, you know, in the same studio, you can kind of raise the hand like, hey, I'm next. I want to weigh in.
Oh, yeah. Can't make the eye contact. But I'm pretty sure Logan and I, we're just going to stay apart even after things get back to normal. We like this. We like this two-studio thing.
That would be funny.
Jeff Dantzler and Chris Brame in the afternoons, they're in the same boat too, so it's kind of interesting for us here. But yeah, certainly looking forward to when we get back to a little bit more normal situation. David Pascal is our guest, and David writes for the Chattanooga Times Free Press, also co-host of Press Row on the how do y'all say it? Do y'all go 105.1 The Zone? Is that how you roll it out there? Okay, 105.1 The Zone.
Excellent. David, I know up in Chattanooga there's a very healthy contingent of Bulldog fans, also a very healthy contingent of Tennessee Vol fans, and that seems to be two fan bases that have had fun going at war with one another, especially with Tennessee racking up the recruits. So what is the mindset of the Tennessee fans? Because you deal with them a whole lot more than we do here in Athens.
You know, it's funny. Credit Jeremy Pruitt and his staff for doing a lot of the early work. And you know, I think 15 of their – they've got 22 total commitments right now, and 15 of the top 16 have committed since the pandemic, since the NCAA, you know, kept extending this dead period, which is now through June 30th. And so, yes, it's been coordinated, and Dylan Brooks, the you know, weak side defensive end, outside linebacker / outside linebacker from Roanoke, Alabama. He was kind of the one that got the ball rolling, and it has been coordinated where a lot of these guys, you know, just seemingly day after day after day were committing to Tennessee. But it's an interesting dynamic because, you know, before this thing all got going, you know, Tennessee had a bunch of three stars, and they were sitting there ranked, you know, around 20th in the country or whatever. And so, you know, it's an interesting dynamic in that their average class ranking, you know, per recruit, I should say, is, even though Tennessee's got the highest rated class in the SEC right now, if you go by per capita recruit, they're like 7th. And I think Georgia's at the top right now with the crop that they've gotten, which isn't large in number, but it's huge in quality. You know, Bama's way up there in quality, LSU, Auburn, Florida, Texas A&M, they're all ahead of Tennessee from that standpoint. So Tennessee's average prospect ranking is actually a little bit lower than it was in this past cycle when Tennessee finished 10th. So there's a little bit of that dynamic. Is it quality? Is it quantity? And really, I mean, I think the interesting thing is just what this class looks like in a few months. Because if the floodgates open and these guys are allowed to take visits, then maybe some of these guys decommit. I do think Tennessee has a couple of three stars that are going to get upgraded. I mean, they've got a defensive back from Tallahassee that picked Tennessee over Clemson and LSU, the two teams that played in the national championship game. He's a three-star, but I think his rating probably goes up. But it's just going to be wild to see. You have a lot of these guys now, as you know, that like to make their decisions before the start of their senior year so they can have a fun senior football season. Is that the case? Does that hold, or does Tennessee wind up having just tons and tons of decommitments? Because out of their 22 commitments, 20 are from outside the state, which is a unbelievable number.
Well, I was going to ask you about that too. I mean, I understand Tennessee's high school football is not as deep as Georgia or Alabama or Florida, you know, but what would be a normal percentage of players that, that Tennessee gets that are in-state?
It varies. I mean, 2 years ago, it was a very profound difference as well. I mean, and when I say 2 years ago, I guess I'm already looking ahead to the 21 cycle. When you talk about the 19 cycle, when Tennessee got Wanya Morris, the tackle out of Georgia, and got the five-star tackle out of West Virginia, too, Darnell Wright, Eric Gray, the running back out of Memphis, was one of just four in-state signees that year. So that was an 18-4 breakdown. But if you go back and look at some of Butch Jones's classes, you know, Tennessee 5 years ago, you know, was benefiting from a spike in Nashville. And I think long-term Nashville, you know, it's a rapidly growing area that's producing more and more talent, which helped Tennessee. This year's not just a monster year within the state, but I do think Tennessee, compared to like a Arkansas, because that's another state where you can't just make a living recruiting within your state, but Arkansas doesn't have any areas that are growing like a Nashville that can keep them going. I mean, that's a program that's really hurting by comparison when you're talking about recruiting and having to leave the state. But, you know, again, Jeremy Pruitt, when you think about his previous stops, I mean, he was the defensive coordinator at FSU. Then he was, you know, defensive coordinator at Georgia for a couple of years. Then he was defensive coordinator at Alabama. All those stops, you know, the Florida Panhandle, Georgia and Alabama, Pruitt is you know, kind of holding his own in those areas, which is, you know, benefiting Tennessee.
Talking with David Pascal as he joins us this morning here on 960 The Ref.
Yeah, that's something you've said a couple times now. I do agree with that. Pruitt is doing a better job than previous regimes at Tennessee. And now that we're seeing the fruits of that labor come together, it may not be what Tennessee fans think it is, perhaps, in terms of a quality class. But here is starting this season, we're going to have Georgia-Tennessee, love it or hate it, playing that late November schedule. So give us a five-year forecast or so. Do you see some of those games in the near future between Georgia and Tennessee being so late on the schedule, perhaps with a SEC East Championship on the line?
Well, and I think that's a huge reason for that move. I think it makes it, you know, nice because, I mean, goodness gracious, how many times has Georgia and Florida gotten together in Jacksonville, and whoever wins that game, the East is over.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have, like, no drama in November as far as the eastern side of that division. I mean, Florida, when Urban Meyer was there, it seemed like they would clinch a lot in that game, and then credit Kirby Smart in the last few years where Georgia is just in total control if they hadn't won it already after that game. So I do think that there is a potential for that, but let's, you know, it's one of those things. Tennessee has come off a horrific decade.
Right.
I mean, when they beat Indiana in the Gator Bowl, that made them one game over 500 for the 2010. I mean, that's how mediocre they've been. And, you know, while a six-game winning streak to end the season is cause for optimism, it's not like they were beating, you know, Murderers Row down the stretch last year. And even in the Gator Bowl, they were down 22-9 to Indiana before coming back and winning. So, I mean, when we talk about the Butch Jones recruiting and where they've been, I mean, when you look at where Tennessee ranks in recruiting and how they've performed in the last decade, you could argue that they're the most underachieving team in the country, or certainly one of. And so, I mean, it's one of those that, yeah, you'd like to see, you know, Tennessee, you know, make it a little more than just a Georgia. I mean, well, right now it's Georgia's show and Florida's your closest competitor, and then it's everybody else. And so for the sake of just, you know, mixing things up and having a little more variety, you'd like to see that Tennessee-Georgia game mean something in November. But, you know, obviously Tennessee's got a lot of work to do to make that happen.
So with what we've seen over the last couple of years and the way recruiting's gone, would you say Florida's closer to Georgia or Tennessee's closer to Florida as far as how things stack up right now? I've actually seen – I saw one, you know, preseason ranking that had Florida ahead of Georgia, which I think Georgia fans should love that because I know that's just going to fire people up. But how would you rank what the pecking order looks like in the SEC East and not just rank it, but how, you know, the difference between the programs?
I would probably say, you know, given that Florida has closed the gap a little against Georgia, I mean, you know, it went from 42-7 to 36-17 to 24-17, however you want to say it.
Yeah.
I mean, because right now, I mean, I guess when you ask that question, the first thing I think of is just how lopsided the Florida-Tennessee games have been the last couple of years. You know, it wasn't that, you know, it seemed like when Butch Jones coached, you know, Tennessee would, I mean, Florida would win on some kind of miracle play. You know, a 60-yard pass at the horn or whatever. But the last 2 years have been just brutal. I mean, Florida came up to Knoxville a couple of years ago and just demolished them. Granted, Tennessee just turned it over every other possession and helped them. And then I would say that even though last year, when you think about the Georgia State game and how it's probably the most embarrassing loss Tennessee has ever suffered, people forget about that. Kind of overshadows the fact that like 2 or 3 weeks later, they went down the swamp and were just totally anemic. And so that, I mean, that may have been even worse of a performance than the Georgia State game as far as just looking pathetic. And so that's the big deal to me, is can Tennessee close that gap a little against Florida? Because right now that looks pretty sizable, more sizable to me than the Georgia-Florida distance.
David Paschal joining us, and I love what you've been doing, because I'm sure some people take umbrage to it, where you're writing about the top five players at certain schools. Have you done Alabama, Tennessee, Georgia? Are you doing anyone else, or just those three?
No, just yeah, we're kind of that tri-state area. I mean, I know you said, I mean, and it's true. We live just right on that Tennessee Georgia border, and of course, Northeast Alabama is not overly populated, and we don't sell just tons of papers into Northeast Alabama. But I mean, you go to any little sporting goods store in Chattanooga, and there have been years where you walk in and the Alabama stuff's front and center because they've, you know, just won a national championship kind of thing. So you certainly see a lot of Alabama flags flying around here too. So really, we try to do all three of them. That's why I did a countdown of the top five of all three,
which is cool. You got Johnny Majors number three for Tennessee, which, by the way, he turns 85 tomorrow, I believe, which is incredible. But
it's not as incredible as Charlie Trippi in 98.
Insane. Absolutely insane. I know, it's so cool. And I mean, I'm with you on the, not, let's see, on the, you got, for Georgia, I know it was a hard time trying to figure out who number one was, but yeah, Charlie Trippi number two, Bill Stanfield number three, Pollock number four, and Sinkwich number five. I think that's a solid one through five right there for Georgia. But I did like that you guys had Derek Thomas number one for Alabama.
You know, I honestly think that's as big. And one little caveat to this countdown that I did, and I kind of did a preview article before these things started running. It's been a lot of fun, too, because I'll get an email and I'll be like, no, wait a minute, think of the guidelines here. It's based solely on their college accomplishments. So
yes.
What they did in the NFL does not matter one bit.
Nothing, yeah.
And perfect example is Alabama, because John Hanna was on the cover of Sports Illustrated with the New England Patriots in 1981, and it said, the greatest lineman of all time. I mean, and John Hanna was a two-time All-American at Alabama. But if you go back almost a decade ago, Barrett Jones at Alabama was a freshman All-American, and then he became a two-time All-American, and then he was named All-SEC at guard, tackle, and center. And he's the only one to ever be named All-SEC at three different positions. He won the Outland at tackle. He won the Remington at center. And so I'm just like, how can you leave? I mean, if these are the guidelines, and so – believe me, there were people that were just like, how could you have Barrett Jones over John Hanna? Because Barrett Jones played like 10 games with the St. Louis Rams. And
yeah.
That was it.
And I think of John, you know, my age, I think of John Hanna. You know, I knew him as a New England Patriot before, you know, I realized, oh, this is an Alabama guy. So it's kind of – but you're right. I mean, that's interesting. I'd forgotten Barrett Jones was that decorated. That's incredible. You know, and with
right.
as many great players as they've had. You know, the other thing that we had talked about before, this was back during the Super Bowl, that no Alabama player has ever scored a point in the Super Bowl, which is completely – now, you know, there have been touchdowns thrown by Alabama players, obviously, but there's never been a point scored by an Alabama player, which is just that's insane. You know? It's weird how things go, but I love this kind of stuff, and the latest tweet you had has Johnny Majors number 3 for Tennessee. So are number 2 and number 1 still yet to be announced?
Yes, and I think the one that got the most attention, to my credit, I've had more positive than negative emails on this, because I was like, I even led the article before pressing send on that "you're a moron" email, because I had Fuad Rave.
Yeah, I saw that.
At the same time at Tennessee with Kevin Butler at Georgia, and just the impact Rave's had on that program was incredible. I mean, even today, and of course, you run the risk of how can you put a kicker on your top 5 list or whatever, but Rave still has school records, he still has SEC records, and he still has NCAA records. And in 1982, he was 8 of 10 from 50 or longer. So that number 8 is still a record, and that 80% accuracy from 50 yards or longer is still an NCAA record. But when you think about, like, Kevin Butler, you know, you had the huge kick against Clemson in 84 for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times Kevin Butler was kicking extra points after, you know, Herschel or after Georgia was just whipping somebody.
Right.
You know, I mean, they didn't have to. Now, Fuad Rave's every other week was having to bail Tennessee out of these games. And so I made the argument that in 1981, and that was the year that Tennessee went down to Georgia and Georgia beat them 44-0.
Yep.
Well, the next week, Tennessee goes out to Southern Cal and loses 43-7.
Jeez.
So Tennessee is 0-2. They've been outscored 87-7. And Johnny Majors is 21-25 with a couple of ties into his fifth year. And so, I mean, the Wolves were, like, coming out. I mean, this was a hire that was not working. I mean, this guy had led Pitt to the 76 National Championship, and it's just like, this is going all wrong. Well, Tennessee rebounded that year and went 8-2 the rest of the way, so they went 8-4 overall. But Rave's was the difference. They beat Auburn 10-7, and Auburn was pretty mediocre that year. That was Pat Dye's first year. They beat a terrible Georgia Tech team 10-7. They beat Wichita State 24-21 with a Rave's field goal at the horn. Wichita State dropped their program like 5 years later. So this was a terrible Tennessee team that Rave's bailed out, and it was the same thing in 82. He hit a 52-yarder to beat a lousy Iowa State by 2 points. They go down to Baton Rouge and play a decent LSU team, and he hits another 52-yarder to tie LSU with, like, 2 minutes left, and that game stayed a tie. And then, of course, the game that kind of turned the Majors era around was in 1982. They beat Alabama 35-28, but it wasn't a 5-touchdown 35. Rave's made 4 field goals in that game. So, I mean, Rave's just absolutely over and over again saved the Johnny Majors era. And if Johnny Majors had been fired, that means Philip Fulmer would have been fired, because he was the offensive line coach.
Right.
And if Fulmer was out, that, you know, David Cutcliffe would have been gone. And David Cutcliffe recruited Peyton Manning. And so Tennessee's really good run, you know, they won 5 SEC titles from like 85 through, 2000. And so you've got, I think a lot of that was due to Rave's saving Majors and Fulmer as an assistant and all that. So he had as much of an impact after he left as he did when he was there.
That's incredible. I have never even thought of it that way, but that, I don't know if it's the butterfly, the domino effect, but that is insane because of the kicking of Fuad Rave's. What where is he now?
Gosh, he may be in the Knoxville area. Of course, his son, Nick Rave's, was a linebacker a few years ago there. And see, that's the other thing. I mean, with both Butler and Rave's, I don't think many people, you know, kickers have that, let's mess with the kicker. I don't think many people were messing with Butler and Rave's back in the day. I mean, you know, Rave's was a linebacker and a 188-pound wrestler in high school. So if you want to, you know, pick on him, go right ahead and take your chance. So, you know, he was originally from, like, Bogota, Colombia, and moved to Miami. And so, you know, and his brother Carlos kicked after he did.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, Georgia and Tennessee are real similar in that they've got this real long-standing tradition in special teams. I mean, like Willie Gault had 5 kickoff returns for touchdowns in his career.
Right.
And so, but you know, when you think of the greatest, you know, Revaise of all the kickers, punters, I mean, Tennessee's had 4 Colquitts that punted in the NFL. But, you know, Revaise was the best of all of them. And so I just figured if any team deserved a special teams mention in a top 5 countdown, it was Tennessee.
That's great stuff. That really is. Man, where is the time gone? David, it is always great catching up with you. We appreciate it and love your perspective because, as we were talking about, you're up in the golden Georgia-Tennessee-Alabama triangle up there. So, I'm sure on your radio show, whenever you make a point that's positive about one school, the other 2 schools probably get upset and vice versa. So you probably can't win to a lot of your audience up there.
No, you can't. And when you think about the schools we cover, the team that would be next in line is Auburn. And, you know, I'm an yeah. Auburn graduate.
Yeah.
People are like, how come you don't do more on Auburn? You went to Auburn. You know, so I get that one a lot, too.
Oh, that's good stuff. Now, where are you from originally?
I'm from here originally.
Okay.
I mean, I lived in North Carolina and California when I was real little, but then we settled here.
Gotcha. So you're from, okay, excellent. Well, David, great stuff, my man. I appreciate it. You guys stay safe, and we'll catch up with you again.
I sure hope so. I sure hope we see, and I hope I see y'all face to face.
Yes, sir.
In the upcoming month. But David and Logan, always great visiting with
y'all
as well.
By the way, are you thinking that Media Days is going to be a virtual one? I know they hadn't said
I
it.
I am.
Yeah,
I am.
That's what we're thinking too.
Yeah, which is a bummer. Which is definitely a bummer.
I know, especially since it's supposed to be in Atlanta this year. So, interesting.
I know. This almost seems like they could move it. I almost wonder if they could move it back to Hoover just this year. If that would logistically be easier, because I mean, Atlanta. The 1 year it was in Atlanta, it did have a crowded feel to it. Not that Hoover doesn't, but I mean, I don't know. Atlanta just seemed like absolute chaos by comparison.
I'm team Hoover for all time. I love going out there, man. Love it.
I do too. I don't mind Hoover one bit. I mean, I get trying to move it around, trying to make a buck, but yeah.
I hear you. Hey, thanks, David.
All right, you guys take care.
All thanks, right. David Pascal, Chattanooga Times, Free Press, and can also catch him on the airwaves in Chattanooga, co-host of Press Row. What do you say, 3 to 6? On ESPN 105.1 The Zone.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.